This is a Times Online podcast.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to a slightly unscheduled special Bugle 64 Appendage 1 sub-issue of The Bugle. Yes, I'm afraid there is no regular Bugle this week. It's just me, Andy Zaltzman, here in London. John Oliver, I'm afraid, is not in New York City, nor indeed any other city in the world, or indeed any place with a recording studio. I'm afraid he can't be here. This is due to a slight diary malfunction, I believe it's known as. So, sadly, he's not here. We'll be back next week. Instead, we've uncorked some vintage, previously unheard bits of the Bugle that were simply too good or too dangerous to be broadcast at the time and had to be given a bit of time to settle down. Plus, a guided tour of the all-new Bugle website with celebrity guest Al Pacino. Has Pacino turned up yet, Tom?
Afraid not. We're still ringing him.
He always lets you down. Always. So this is not, I repeat, not an official Bugle 65, and anyone who tries to sell it to you as an authentic 65, anyone who tries to sell you it as an authentic 65 is a charlatan of the most rotten biscuit. Now, I know that you Buglers out there have been waiting on tenterhooks, or even on the edge of your seats, or with bated breath, or even with bated bears. Whatever gets you off, I suppose, for John's Bill Clinton gig stories that he promised us last week. Well, you're going to have to stay on your tenterhooks for another week, I'm afraid. And if you'd only leased your tenterhooks until this week, tough luck. Hire some new ones, or better still, buy your own if you're going to spend so much time on them, you cheapskates. All I know is that John sent me an email saying he is never washing his sweatpants ever again. Now, I also realise that following several weeks of fielding and perhaps even encouraging death threats from you, our listeners, suddenly and without warning to turn up and do a show without John might look a little suspicious. But I can assure you that, as far as I know, neither I nor anyone else has yet bumped John off. In fact, I got a text from him a couple of days ago, or at least I hope it was from him. I guess it could have been from someone who had killed him and nicked his phone. But I guess history will be the judge of that. All I can say is that if any of you Buglers has murdered John Oliver, please cancel your subscription to this podcast. We don't want your sort associated with this show. Oh, now, you also might think it a little bit odd that John has gone missing on, of all weekends, Oscars weekend. So I guess it is possible that he's just hanging out in LA, just in case he gets a surprise gong for Best Supporting Actor. You never know. I still haven't seen it. I can't judge. But I guess we'll only know if he turns up still crying and thanking people next week. I guess that'll be a giveaway. Now, we did, of course, try to replace John for this issue. Very difficult job, that. So we tried a number of suitably eminent figures, but none could do it. We did ask actor Vin Diesel, but after a couple of days umming and ahhing about it, he claimed he couldn't really get into the role of John Oliver and complained that there weren't enough car crashes in the script. We then asked Nobel Prize-winning scientista Françoise Barrès-Sinoussi, who discovered HIV, but she said she was too busy doing some science and that she hated the show, and she won't allow anyone in her lab to listen to it, least of all when there are some viruses on the loose. So instead we ask the reigning Olympic triathlon champion, Jan Frodeno, if he'd step in for us. But unfortunately, the big German said he would only do it if he could simultaneously swim, cycle and run whilst recording. We said that would be okay, but he then said he had to wear a sleeveless vest and swimming trunks whilst doing so, and we drew the line. So then we asked Pope John the 18th, trying to get someone with the same name as John. We thought it might be interesting also for him to talk about what it's like to have been dead for 1,000 years, as he will have been in July, but his agent said he's no longer doing interviews. So I'm afraid it's just me, Tom, our producer, and almighty Zeus. Tom, hello.
Hello.
Zeus, hello. Giving me the silent treatment. So I won't fat sacrifice my daughter. Get over it, beard boy. So this is the special appendage issue for the week beginning Monday, the 23rd of February, which, of course, is the 106th anniversary of Cuba leasing Guantanamo Bay to the USA in perpetuity. And that is possibly the best way out for Barack Obama now, just to tell Cuba that they can have it all back. There you go. There are still a few angry chaps inside, but all in all, it's still in pretty good nick. And also, yesterday, as you listen on Monday, as you're supposed to legally, 22nd of February, was the 212th anniversary of the last ever land invasion of Britain, a pretty half-assed effort by the French that ended up in a pub in Wales. Now, even though this is just a special bonus edition of the Bugle, some sections are going straight in the bin, including this week a building materials section. With the credit crunch forcing more and more people to undertake their own building and civil engineering projects, we tell you how to tell the difference between a brick and half a brick. Also, how to tell if your building has fallen down. And girders made of ice. They might seem a good money-saving idea in the depths of winter, but can you be sure they'll still do the job come summertime? Also in the bin, a special preview of the International Taxi Hailing Championships. Can Anglo-Polish genius Kevin Wojciechowski Zbigniewski Perkins retain his title with his signature Elvis costume-wearing, severed giraffe's head-wielding, trombone-honking, cab-driver attention-grabbing technique? Plus, we look ahead to the NASA Space Golf Tournament. Tiger Woods or Buzz Aldrin? Who's your money on? Woods, of course, the better golfer. Aldrin, more accustomed to being in space. Could go either way. Plus, a free day off for all Bugle listeners. Must also be approved and validated by the boss of the organisation for which you work. Non-transferable. Valuable between 23rd of February 2009 and 22nd of February 2108. So anytime in the next 99 years. So, in the absence of John, we have dug deep into the Bugle vaults and found this very funny story from a few weeks ago about a kid driving a car. And now, non-fatal and therefore amusing children driving cars news. a six-year-old...
What a key distinction that is in this story, Andy, because if the ending was different, we would not be talking about this.
A six-year-old boy in America drove his parents' car for 10 kilometres in an effort to get to school on time. His parents have been charged with neglect and the boy has been taken into care. Apparently he missed the school bus and then while his mum apparently was still asleep, drove the car for 6 miles on major roads.
Good for him.
Weaving through traffic before losing control and going off the road. He told the police that he had learned to drive by playing computer games. But I guess what this shows is that there's no better way to learn how to drive than by actually driving. And it's probably the best driving lesson he could have, John, is to drive 10 kilometres before having a crash as a six-year-old boy. I mean, that's the kind of practical life skills school should be teaching you, but isn't. And it's good that he showed the desire to learn to take this into his own hands.
It's a real shame that he did crash, though, Andy, that he didn't make it. He didn't, like, just pull up into a parking space at school, get out, bleep, bleep. Oh, boy. Traffic was an absolute nightmare. Anyway, geography.
Geography, singing Bruce,
where's the sandpit?
Singing Bruce Springsteen songs all the way through morning.
That's right. Roll the window down, turn up Thunder Road.
I guess, John, what this proves is that there is a reason why six-year-olds aren't allowed to drive cars. And that's because their legs are too short and they're too easily distracted. And I'll bet you any money in the world, provided that it's not my money, but that kid was doing absolutely fine until he saw an advert for Transformers or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or whatever it is kids like these days.
That is the two most... How can you, with children, have outdated references like that, Andy?
Well, my children like cricket and bullshit.
No, they don't. They don't, Andy.
Is that me?
They don't. Oh, yeah, well, that's you. That's still you.
They will, John. I will mould them in my own image.
Let me tell you what you like, boy.
Boy. Boy. The boy has already watched quite a lot of cricket.
Has he?
Well, if he cries in the middle of the night, I'm going to have to take him downstairs.
Little father-son time. That's right. Has he been doing a lot of sleeping? He did a lot of sleeping when he was on me, Andy.
Well, you're pretty dull.
Maybe that was it. Maybe I was boring. There I was thinking I was lulling him into a peaceful sleep when he had a little bit of a cold. Thinking, oh, this is great. You know, I'm bonding with this child. Look, we're getting along. And clearly I just bored him.
Yeah. He was just sitting there thinking...
Bored him until he passed out.
Is there ever going to be a punchline?
This is a meandering anecdote.
Well, you can say what you like about Mussolini, but stories about kids driving cars will always be funny. Now, of course, barely a minute goes by these days without someone President Obama has appointed jumping ship after doing something naughty, like not paying taxes, or not paying them cheerfully enough, or filling out their tax return with the wrong colour pencil. And never more was this so than at the very minute that Tom Daschle resigned from his proposed post. In other Obama news, Daschle's hopes dashed. Did you see what I did there?
Well done, Andy. Well done. I see. Thanks, you
mate.
Used his surname.
Yep.
And you put it into... You kind of referenced it as part of a different context in a headline.
Yep.
To make the headline leap off the audio page.
Yeah.
Well, Obama has come under fire this week after his choice for Health Secretary Tom Daschle withdrew his nomination under the accusation that he owes over $100,000 in back taxes after receiving a free car and a driver. And this stems from Obama's inauguration announcement to remove the culture of lobbying from the White House. And the problem with saying something like that, Andy, is you really have to then do it or face some pretty obvious criticism.
I guess the problem he faces, John, is that in attempting to start afresh in politics, he will basically need, if he wants people who are untainted, he's going to need to appoint people who have basically never attempted to gain influence by dubious means or avoided fulfilling their basic duties. And the difficulty here is finding anyone who fits into this narrow remit who is over the age of two. I think that's the real problem, although, to be fair, two-year-olds do have certain similarities to professional politicians in that they often simply repeat what you say, then smile at you in an effort to win approval, and then expect you to clean up all their mess after them.
Well, when this story emerged, Obama went on TV and said, "I screwed up." Wow. I mean, bear in mind that it took Frost days to get an even tacit admission of guilt from Nixon. I don't think this holds quite that drama. We're not likely to be seeing a hit stage play and movie in the future titled Gibson Obama. And that's the kind of instant accountability we're just not used to receiving. And again, you could sense a slight disappointment in the press corps. Oh, don't give it up that easily. At least give us the thrill of the futile chase.
Now, here's a story from way back in January 2009, when the car industry became the latest to come cap in hand to the US government and ask for some money to stop it disappearing down the plug hole of short-term expediency. World car industry news now, and, well, cars are the latest industry to be bailed out, John. The business secretary, Peter Mandelson, has announced a £2.3 billion scheme to try and rescue the British motor industry. And one of the conditions is that the motor industry does more to produce more environmentally friendly cars. Right. Up until now, of course, the motor industry has always objected to things like electric cars on the grounds that we like things that go vroom, 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 not wee. Vroom is much cooler.
That really was basically the argument given. They've justified this bailout by claiming that UK manufacturers are still a viable business. And there was then a faint snort of laughter from Japan as Nissan and Toyota said, sorry, you are right. No, you're definitely viable car manufacturing businesses. We were laughing about something else.
Some opponents of the scheme have raised concerns, including such an important green element will be economically tricky at this difficult time, and have expressed doubts about whether saving the planet is in fact economically viable at all in the current economic climate. It's just one of those things, John, that might have to wait until the economy's back on its feet before we actually start attempting not all to suffocate.
They could be following the lead of the US car manufacturers, where it was revealed this week there was one point last year when for every car sold, they lost $2,000. Listen, Andy, I'm not an expert in tycoonery. I'm really not, but that is a bad business model. And now it's almost like these car companies have acted like goons. Oh, you don't want to buy one of my f***ing cars? How about I make you buy the whole f***ing company? How you like that? Now get me a calzone. I'm hungry up in here.
Sounds
how about
like
that, Andy?
Sounds like an audition for Goodfellas 2 there, John.
Well, Goodfellas 2, The Return of the Pants. Back on the horse that kicked you again and again and again.
The British car industry has been struggling for some time, John. It used to be guaranteed an annual boom every August the 1st, I think it was, when the new number plates came out every year with a new letter at the start or previously the end of the number plate. And people rush out to be the first person on their street to have a car with a different letter at the front of their registration plate, proving that despite all the good people do and all the amazing achievements of the human species over the last few thousand years, fundamentally, people are dicks. But as the credit crunch has bitten, we've increasingly realised that cars work just as well, even if they're a bit old. And new cars are therefore not quite as necessary as things like bread, which does only work when new. And let me tell you that from bitter, bitter experience. Well, everyone knows that the world is in a constant state of flux, and so too is the Bugle webpage, timesonline.co.uk/thebugle. Particularly now it's been remodelled and relaunched by Tom, our producer. So strap in for an official guided tour of the new Bugle webpage with our celebrity tour guide, Al Pacino. Is he here yet, Tom?
Yes, he is.
Oh, great. Hello, I'm Al Pacino. Welcome to the new Bugle webpage. You neither look nor sound like the real Al Pacino. Oh, I'm Al Pacino, Alan Pacino from Huddersfield, Yorkshire. I feel like me get on with my job. Tom, you really must research our celebrity guest booking policy better than you're currently doing so. Right, the rules for this tour. No smoking, no horseplay. Right, pay attention. Right, at the top of the new webpage, you've got the link to this week's Bugle.
Then just to the right, you've got the archive of previous bugles dating back to the historic Bugle 1, which is quite literally where it all began. No talking, please. Right, just below the main link to this week's episode, we've got a carousel featuring the last four bugles. So if you can't get a hold of the bugles using all these different means, then frankly you don't deserve to hear it. Just to the right, we have the Bugle map of the world, to which you can and have been contributing. It's got dotted on it the great locations of the Bugle, for example London, where Andy records, and New York, where John sometimes is, Venezuela, the home of Hugo Crackers from Caracas Chavez, Bugle Politician of the Year 2008, 2007 and 2006, and various other Bugle hotspots, including Iran, the home of the Roger Federer of jaunty Middle Eastern leaders, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Add yourself to this map, tell us where you're listening to the Bugle from. Some people have already done so. Liz claims to be in the Bugle depressing spot, Aylesbury in Buckinghamshire, UK, and she writes, probably the single most depressing place you are likely to encounter. A statue of John Hampden, heroic parliamentarian of the English Civil War and flaming hottie from history. Oh yeah. Stands in the market square and kindly points miserable travellers the way out of town. That is a town, people, that knows exactly how bad it is. A huge statue telling people to right off for their own good. We've already had people in Rehokoski in Finland. That can't exist. Edmonton in Canada? No, definitely not. And Olongapo City in the Philippines. The home of an American base, giant fruit bats, baby monkeys and a couple of Bugle listeners. So do I add yourselves to this map. Back now to the main webpage, just below the Bugle map of the world. If you look, you can see the 2009 Hotties from History calendar. Do only open this link if you are alone in a darkened room. It contains quite volcanic levels of historical hotness. Does perhaps suggest that we haven't quite let this idea go. So sometimes saying goodbye is the hardest thing to do. Then we have a clever video console that Tom's put on, so we can watch the latest episode of the Bugle. Of course, the Bugle is recorded as audio, not video, so I don't know quite why you'd want to watch it, Tom.
Well, Mr. Tour Guide, the reason we have a video module with, obviously, an audio presentation is that we can now bookmark the Bugle homepage, and when it changes, you can get the latest episode without the tedious chore of digging down to the latest page.
Get back on the bus. Back on the bus, this tour's not over. Right, just below the video console, we've got a link to the Bugle Wiki, so do feel free to add your lies to this, a listener message board. There's the famous photo of John dancing, some links to the late-lamented Bugle column that proved too explosive for the newspaper to continue with. And Bugle music, free downloads of things like Florence Nightingale rap, remixed by you, our listeners, and the Hugo Chavezagram, and the Bugle theme that you can download and play to your friends as a means of intimidation. And finally, if you look at the bottom of the Bugle page, you will see, in the future, the return of the Bugle blog, as written by Andy Zaltzman, containing little snippets and reactions to your best emails. That will return shortly. This concludes the guided tour. All off, please. Take your litter with you. Do not deface the bus. Do not set fire to the bus. Do not tip the bus over. Leave the bus alone. Get off the bus and go and look at the webpage. Thank you. So to mark the historic relaunch of the Bugle webpage, Tom has created some prizes to give away to whoever we judge to have made the best contribution to the Bugle webpage will win a free Bugle t-shirt. It's Tom is now modelling for me now. It's a kind of white on-the-shoulder number with the famous Bugle logo on it and the word, you say potato, I also say potato. Oh, and you can have my name on the back and the number 10. Or John's name and the number 7, is he? That's what he thinks of himself as a footballer. Realistically, he's a squad player, it'd be lucky to have a number. That will be given to the person or people we judge to have made the best contributions to the Bugle Wiki page or the Google Map, or even send us a particularly outstanding bit of musical remixing. And the deadline for that is Thursday the 5th of March. And anyone who fails to win a T-shirt will have to live with the stain and embarrassment of defeat until their dying day.
Your emails now, and thanks once again for continuing to send in your emails. Slightly too many death threats still. Your death threats are duly noted. And at any point in the future where John and I consider ourselves to be about to die, we will think of you, and I hope you'll think of us. Hopefully, this is a good few years in the future. This email came in from Jeremy D. Ashton. This email came in from Jeremy in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. And he writes, "Dear Oliver and Zaltzman, in order of Daily Show appearances..." Fair enough, no arguments with that. "In the waning few brackets, hundreds brackets days of his administration, George W. Bush was fond of saying that only history could judge his presidency. Well, history's verdict is already in, and it's not looking good. For President's Day, C-SPAN asked 65 historians and presidential experts to rate the men who have held the office of president based on 10 leadership qualities. Out of 42 former presidents, Bush came in 36th. To put that in perspective, Herbert Great Depression Hoover finished 34th. To put that in still more perspective, Richard I'm Not a Crook Nixon finished 27th. And to put that in even more perspective, here are the six presidents who ranked worse than George W. Bush." That's right, six. You can count them on the fingers of two hands with a couple of fingers left over. Thumbs not included. 37th, Millard Fillmore, a high school history teacher, once told my class that the most notable thing about his presidency was that the earth did not fall off its axis. I guess that's a positive. 38th, Warren G. Harding. Several of his political appointees got caught for accepting bribes, most famously in the Teapot Dome scandal. William Henry Harrison died 32 days into office, as mentioned previously on the Bugle. It's a bad piece of presidency to talk for so long at your inauguration that you catch a cold and die. 40th, Franklin Pierce, supported the Kansas-Nebraska Act, writes Jeremy, inflaming tensions over whether slavery should be allowed to expand west. 41st, and second worst, Andrew Johnson, also owner of the least memorable presidential name, was the first president to be impeached during the Reconstruction period after the Civil War. Here, post-civil rights legislation quickly welcomed ex-Confederates back into the Union. And 42nd, and worst president of all time, it's little Jimmy Buchanan, did absolutely nothing to stop the country from moving towards civil war, even sitting idly by as southern states seceded. Brackets as a side note, is it any wonder Abraham Lincoln finished first in the survey and he was immediately preceded and followed by the worst and second worst presidents ever? There you go, it is looking good for Obama at Mount Rushmore, as I've already said. So if you're keeping score on the George W. Bush legacy, 1. Starting an unnecessary war based on false information, 2. Presiding over a major economic meltdown, and 3. Letting an American city drown are worse than A. leading the country into the Great Depression, or B. resigning in disgrace after getting caught spying on your political enemies, but better than A. doing nothing, B. having an administration full of convicted criminals, C. letting the country descend into civil war, D. botching the Reconstruction effort following said civil war, or E. dying 32 days into office. Well, I hope that's put the last 8 divisive years into perspective. Presidentially yours, Jeremy in Florida. Thanks very much, Jeremy. I'm glad we can now all happily sleep at night, knowing that were America to field 3 teams of its best presidents of all time in a football tournament, George W. Bush would only be on the bench. And this one comes from Kirk in Austin, Texas. On the subject, a word from the Swedorecans. Dear John and Andy, as a loyal Bugle listener, is there any other kind? I sincerely hope not. I've been utterly disappointed by your lack of coverage of Swedorican-related news. That's right, Swedoricans. We are the proud people of mixed Swedish and Puerto Rican descent. The Swedorican nation was born and my Swedish grandfather and Puerto Rican grandmother made sweet interracial love, conceiving the first Swedorican, my aunt. Since then, I just don't think you should write about your grandparents making sweet love. Whether or not they did or didn't, it just sounds wrong. Anyway, since then, we have become a proud people with populations almost in double digits. Whilst the majority of us reside either in Texas or Georgia, we believe we have claim to the Holy Lands, just like the Jews, Palestinians and everyone else. You think we'd claim Sweden or Puerto Rico or maybe just the spot of ocean equidistant from the two. But actually, we want Jerusalem. The whole problem over there could be solved by throwing out all of those other folks and let the Swedoricans have a chance at peace in the Middle East. Give us some love, John and Andy. Just because you limey Brits never colonised Swedorico doesn't mean that you can't show us some Bugle love. From Kirk in Austin, Texas. So thanks for those emails. Do keep them flooding into the Bugle at timesonline.co.uk. And don't forget, a selection of the best of your emails will be appearing in the all-new Bugle blog on the all-new Bugle webpage. Sport now, and this official report from our marginal sports correspondent, Wohl, at the World Overreaction Championships.
Well, what a first day it's been here. We've had a titanic first round clash between British Golden Girl Derica Codge and American number one Jay Ransford Flutster. In the individual overreaction, Codge from the Nottingham Hyperbolizers Club responded to dropping an egg on her kitchen floor by smashing her entire set of vintage Queen Victoria Memorial Wedgwood egg cups that her grandmother had given her, ordering a whole new kitchen and asking for a divorce. Flutster in turn reacted to hearing an inclement weather forecast on the radio by making a will and barricading himself and his young family 30 feet underground in a nuclear air raid shelter with enough tin goods, bottled water and crosswords to last 18 months. Outstanding overreaction from the Detroit disproportionate star, who celebrated his halftime lead with characteristically excessive celebration involving fireworks and an operetta, thus extending his lead, as Codge could only express her disappointment with a mild 6.8 intensity tantrum. But Codge fought back strongly in the 1-1 overreaction after the break, when she responded to Flutster's offered handshake at the start of the second half by accusing him of sexism, attempted harassment and anti-Semitism based on the fact that she lives near a synagogue. She commenced legal proceedings against Flutster and sought to have a restriction order placed on him to prevent him ever being in the same country as her ever again. The pressure was on the American, but Flutster did just enough to win when Codge told him that his tie didn't go with his shirt. He exploded with rage, ripped all his clothes off, burned them on a barbecue, threw them into a canal and stood naked shouting, "Would you rather I dressed like this then? Hey, what am I? Alan Shitting Greenspan?" So Flutster won with a superb piece of overreaction and goes on to meet French exaggerateur extraordinaire Belfonce Lavour in the quarter-final, whilst Codge must try to hype her way back into contention by the repechage tournament, which could prove difficult after this defeat, which she overreactively described as probably the biggest disappointment in British history.
Well, that's it for this special appendage issue of the Bugle. Sorry that we couldn't bring you a regular Bugle this week, but by consolation, there will be two regular issues next week, albeit they will be exactly the same. All that's left, really, is for the Bugle forecast, and, well, with the end of February rapidly approaching, the forecast for this week is, will it be a leap year this year? It's 2009, so I guess the form guide does suggest that odd-numbered years are very seldom leap years. Last year, 2008, of course, was a leap year, but these things very rarely, if ever, come back-to-back. Almost always coincide with Olympic Games these days as well. 16 in a row now can coincide with Olympic Games. That can't be a fluke. So I'm going to go with no. There will be no 29th of February this year. It's not going to be a leap year. John, on the other hand, I know he's not here, but I do know also that he likes to back the underdog. So in his absence, I'm going to predict on his behalf that it will be a leap year this year. So will it be a leap year? That is the $64,000 question. Literally, that is the standard Bugle bet. John and I both love 1950s US TV game shows. And you can find out who's won by looking at your calendar next Sunday. That's all. Bye-bye from me, Andy Zaltzman, and bye-bye from me, Andy Zaltzman, PP John Oliver, on holiday.
This is a Times Online podcast. For more podcasts, go to timesonline.co.uk/podcasts.